This month, I want to speak about one of the giants of two generations ago, whose yard site is Hei Shvat, and that's the Sfas Emes. First, always try to say where I get my information from. So, Sfas Emes is recent enough. I saw the Beis Yisrael, who as a young child saw the Sfas Emes. In other words, it's within a reach of one over. Most everyone, there isn't that much information about him. And most of what's written is repeated in different places. There was somebody named Bromberg who wrote a big series. He was a Chassidish person, and he wrote 20, 30 little volumes on different Chassidish Rebbeim dynasties, and that's one marker. There's something that came out recently, Mimonos Arroyos, where he has about three people, Sfas Emes and one or two others, where he said he checked over all the stories and so on. Lamaisa, these stories are mostly fit the pattern, and they paint the picture of the person that we're familiar with in terms of the Torahs and so on. So basically, those are the Macarius, no matter whoever wrote about him, it just redid a lot of the stories in different ways, but added more side stories and so on. But those are Macarius. And like I said, it's recent enough history that almost all the facts are checkable. The story starts actually before he was born, and I guess we spoke once about the Chiddush HaRim. It's the end of the Chiddush HaRim story. The Chiddush HaRim had 13 sons who died in his lifetime. We spoke about it. And the last son, the one that got married and had children, he also had daughters and had children, was Rabbi Avraham Mordechai. Rabbi Mordechai was a very chashuv man. And when he was about, he had two or three girls, when he was about 30 years old, he became deathly ill. And the Chiddush HaRim went to visit him. And the Chiddush HaRim told his son, "Uvacharta b'chayim is a mitzvah. You should choose v'charta b'chayim, you should choose and remain alive. And you also need to bring a son into the world." And after the Chiddush HaRim walked out, he sort of lifted himself up. And he said, "Uvacharta b'chayim." And he said, "Ibn Shalom, if I'm zochot to have a son, I'll name him Yehuda after Apam Oida Hashem." He had a son a year later, and he named him Yehuda Leib. The Sfas Emes was born in 1847. 2 years later, his mother passed away. When he was 2 years old, his mother passed away. When he was 8 years old, his father passed away. We said over the story when we spoke with Chiddush HaRim that the Chiddush HaRim's wife was inconsolable. She, you know, like before he was nifta, she begged her husband, you know, do something, be mispalled, you know, shake the heavens, it's something, my last son. And he told her, I don't know if after he was nifta, before, he said, whenever a yid will have a tzara, they'll always be able to console themselves and say, no matter how bad it is, it's not as bad as Ichimaya. And we will be a source of nechama for Klal Yisrael. That was the approach of a very different type of people. Al-Kopanim, at the age of 8, he became a yasim from his father as well. And the truth was, even before he was 8 years old, his father was too sick to take care of him, really. His father was always bedridden, very, very weak. And basically, his grandparents raised him. Chiddush HaRim and his wife raised him. Chiddush HaRim thought the world of the kid. He was an absolute genius from birth. He also had no fun side. He was cold, coolly serious. Chiddush HaRim taught himself, but he took a malamed to teach him. And there were three conditions. First of all, he has to wake him up before Alei Sashacha. Secondly, they have to learn 18 hours a day. And third, there has to be every day some chiddush. He has to come up with some chiddush. You're talking about a boy who was not yet bar mitzvah, or the younger. He was probably 7, 8. But he was capable of it. And he was extraordinary masmid and brilliant. And he raised him. The Chedusha Rim was a Kotzke Chassid. He took the Sfasemis twice to see the Kotzke. At the end of the Kotzke's life, the Kotzke was not seeing people. He had gotten sick and tired of Chassidim. We spoke about that once also. But the Chedusha Rim by him was extraordinary. And when he would come to him, he would yell out, Baruch Haba. And he took Sfasemis, and once, he was there twice. Once he told the Chedusha Rim to go outside to teach him a Shtikl Torah, and then he wanted to ask Sfasemis how he says it over. The second time that he went, he was 10 years old, I think, and he went with a cousin of his. Chedusha Rim took him and a cousin, another grandson of Chedusha Rim, and it was the middle of winter and it was freezing. And somebody saw him and asked the question, why are you taking them? It's freezing and they're shivering and they were huddled under a blanket. And it was a long journey. You know, they don't understand anyway what he's going to say. So what's the point of taking them? And the Chedushim said, I want them to see once in their lifetime an Emes Yid, just to see that. The Sfasemis, when later they asked him, that to describe the Kotzke, he said, what do you mean to describe him? He was a Malach Hashem Tzvokis, a Malach amongst people. But that was a memory that was seared into him, and that was it. At the age of 12, when he turned 12, in 1859, the Kotzke was Nifta, and that's when the Chedusha Rim became a Rebbe. Till that time, he was a Rav. He wasn't Noyeg Rebistva. He Lamaisa went to the Kotzke as a Chassid. As I don't know exactly what his Anhaga was like with the Chassidim, but he wasn't officially a Rebbe, and he was a Kotzke Chassid. So he was he sort of was a Rav, but not. At the age of 60, the Chedusha Rim became a Rebbe. Sfasemis was about 12 years old, and he went to look for a shidduch for Sfasemis. And he found a relative of his and married him off when the Sfasemis was 13 years old. He got married, and those first years of marriage, he was kol kuloi shakur and learning. Kol kuloi sat there and didn't do anything else. And quiet, away from public eye in any way, shape, or form. In 1866, which was basically 4 years later, the Chedusha was Nifta, and he was a young man at the time, 19 years old. And people wanted to take him as a rabbi. And he was very, very upset. He refused Bishamayfan. Wouldn't think of it. What they did do was they made him the Rav of Ger, the township. But he adamantly he wrote very sharp letters. People figured they would sort of jump the gun. And they wrote that he agreed to be a Rebbe, and this and that. He said people write that are liars, and they're doing it because they have their own issues. Very, very sharp letters. He didn't want to be Rebbe, and refused. But he needed as a chassid, he himself needed as a Rebbe. And finally, he decided on Reb Henoch from Alexander. Reb Henoch was wanted a sort of chaver of the Chedusha Rim. Wasn't the stature of Chedusha Rim, but he was a very chashuv person from that generation. And the Sfasemis went to him as a chassid to a Rebbe, and he would go to him. he wasn't mekabel all his anhagis, all his psakim, and so on, but the hachna of a chassid to rebbe was to him, and he went there. What was a sort of something that was a makabe patish, that made him decide that he should be the one to go to, the first Torah that Alexander told him was a shtick, was a vart that the Chiddush Arim had told him at the end of his life. And it's a chazal that wherever the old manik stopped, the new manik starts. So he felt that this is a siman hashamayim, that this is where he should go to. So for 4 years he would go occasionally, he would go. He kept the ma'ase as Rebbe. 4 years later, Rav Henoch was nifta. And once again, the Hasidim, it really pushed very hard. And he pushed back and forth. Finally, he couldn't resist it. They just pushed it. The pressure was a lot. And he agreed. He said, we'll be mechazik each other. He was 23 years old at the time. He became the Rebbe of possibly the largest group of Hasidim. He was renowned at that time already as a massive Talmud Chacham. And basically across the board, everyone held of him. He was universally acknowledged as a giant of his generation. Chassidim, Litvisha, Beis Halevi actually, had high regard for him. They spoke of learning, many others. He had no opposition. So at the age of 23, he became Rebbe, and he was Rebbe for 35 years. He was the one who forged Gera Chassidus into what it is. The main inyanim of Ger were inyanim that he instituted, developed. This was his ideologies. The Chiddush Arim sort of started it. The Chiddush Arim took the burning coal of Kotsk and began the process of making it much more approachable for people. Chiddush Arim wasn't Rebbe for that long, and the Sfas Emes was the one who really made it into what it is. What are the highlights of that Chassidus? What are the main inyanim that the Sfas Emes introduced? The first one, I guess, is learning. Even when the Chiddush Arim had thousands of people literally coming, brachas, eitzes, this, that, he had, most of his day was taken up with kavud kestarim. And the learning Gemara, halacha, you know, was yaharag vayaver. And someone asked him why. He said, how can I give somebody an eitzah if I don't know dalet chalkei shulchan aruch? I could be telling him something shalei kedin. So the need to be a Talmud Chacham, even while you're tending to all the other inyanim of the tzibur, was very strong. He also felt that the strongest eitzah for Yerushalayim is very, very strong learning of Gemara. He told the young man, someone that came to ask him an eitzah for how to fight his Eitzahara, what sefer should learn to fight his Eitzahara? And I guess the person asked the choice between two or three Musa Sfarim. So the Chiddush Arim, so the Sfas Emes told him, he said, in Chayves HaLavavis, Yitzhara also looked into and knows the Sefer. He said, Shnaim Oichzin, the Yitzhara never approached. So the one place where you're safe is Shnaim Oichzin, or Sugya of you know, Bamitzia. Any Inyan, a hard Inyan Gemara, is the place where you're safe from Yitzhara. So it's not that he didn't hold of learning Musa, people lead it learn Sefer Yira, but he felt that the main thing that would keep a person out of Yehurim Royim, out of Yitzhara, would be an extremely strong ligging and learning. And that was that he pushed very, very strongly. Now that was part of that ethos, a strong component of Talmud Torah. Zrizus, he was his time was incredibly, incredibly measured. And it did everything in 1, 2, 3. He once came, some very important Indian kept him up, and then he came to Skavuta Keseda with his children, and he looked very pale and very upset, and they asked him what happened, and he said, "I'm late." Like the idea that he messed up his Seder Zmanim was very, very bad for him. There's a description, he went with some of his brother-in-laws. They went to the caver of somebody for the yard site. They said by the time they unpacked sort of and got out of to go to the caver, Rebbe Shidin, he had already been there, come back, and told the driver to keep moving. So they never actually went to the caver. Zrizus was an extraordinary midah. His son, actually, the Emes, allocated 15 minutes for the main suda of his, the main suda of the dinner, and 7 minutes for the other suda. That was but on the clock. So he was extraordinary. By him, he kept stressing again and again how important time is. And, he never slacked off. He would be mekabel, the chassidim that came by, to talk to him. He'd be standing, he wouldn't be sitting, he'd be standing, leaning against Sfarim Shafa. And his tefisa was incredibly quick, and it would take them within a few moments, he had the person going, invite next person. He was extremely, extremely quick and in his anhagas, very brief, very, very few words, and on. So Talmud Torah was very important, Zrizus was very important. He also was very, very makbid not to take any money from chassidim, from anybody that came to him. So whereby all rabbis, giving money was a big part of the ceremony, and Pidyon was a very important institution, and that's how they supported themselves. His wife ran a small tobacco store, and sometime later, it was a store that sold lottery tickets. Whatever it was, he refused to take money from anybody. He told the tobacco supplier, that supplied his wife's store, the tobacco store, he told him, "Listen, if you want to make as much profit as you want to make on us, I have no problem with that. But if you dare take a loss on us, in other words, you're trying to be good to us by charging us less than it costs, I'm telling you, you're putting your children at risk and my children at risk." And once when a child of his became sick, he asked his wife, had she taken any money from anybody? She said, "Yes, some of that." He said, "You have to give it back," because that's what he was extraordinarily makbid. He felt that any money that he would take from people would be it would distort his thinking. So being very independent money, he always advised people to run businesses, not to take on rabbanis. He was very against it. And someone asked him, "Rebbe, if you tell everybody to go into business and not rabbanis, who's going to be the rabbanim?" So he told them, "The people that ask other rabbis, not me." But again, they demanded a lot of learning. There was a tremendous respect for Talmud Torah was an ikar gadol, and therefore people who had businesses were also expected to be learning most of the day. Either the wife would be running it, someone else would be running it. They always would have a way around it. But tachlis, it was a big mila not to be mispired from the tzibur. It meant also that his hanhagis He had a very another ikur, and I guess it was something which he was able to do because of how he acted. He had a very egalitarian type van Hagga. He didn't want to sit up front. He sat in the middle of the table somewhere. He different times at different places. His van Hagga was very, very low key, and wealthy people did not have any position of prominence in his tish or anything. And he was able to do that because he didn't take money from people. So b'meila, you know, that's how he didn't need them. And he could judge each person kifi what he is. Kifi what he is in stargus shekhaim of a person, taira, and so on. So there was the element of zrizus, taira, this type of, and this was a kotzker mahanhoga of not praving any not praving anything. His one of the midas he was very, very makbid was midas ha'emes. And he told, there was a chassid came to him and told him that he's being offered a new business, complicated or whatever it is. And he went and he spoke with him and gave him a mahalach how to go about it. He told the Rebbe, you know, it's also going to involve, I'm going to be involved with women. I'm going to have to interact with women. What do I do? And the Rebbe gave him etzes, how he could interact with women and still, you know, not lose his kedusha and so on. Then he said, and Rebbe, it also requires some stretching of the truth in different places. The Rebbe said, get out of the business. And, you know, by him, emes was a lot more, it was the most important midah, and therefore, if the business meant you compromise your honesty, then there's no etzes. For women, he had etzes, and for honesty, he had no etzes. If it was dishonest, there's no etzes. It's interesting. His sefer, he wrote a sefer, and the reason why it's called Sfas Emes is the last entry that he has in the sefer. He himself wrote a sefer was Parshas Vayechi, the last year of his life, and he wrote, and the last pasuk is Fas Emes Tikun La'ad, and that's how they named the sefer. So Midas Emes was an extraordinary midah that was chashuv to him, and many stories where people want to do shtick and this and that, and he was no way. He built up a magnificent chassidus. The Sfarim that he left were incredible in both ways. His Sfarim on Shas, we have only Moed and Kotshim, he was supposed to have more, are incredible Sfarim. The Sfarim that are radically different than the Chassidish from before him. The Chedusha Rim is a big mefalpel, and goes back and forth with incredible goyness. But it's a lot of back and forth and long cheshbon and so on and so forth. Sfas Emes is short to the point, very lumdish. It's interesting. Chassidim were afraid to publish it after his patira because they felt it doesn't do him justice. You know, like what are people going to see? You know, a pshat here, a pshat there. None of the magnificent pulpul of the Chedusha Rim is there. And I don't remember who it was that advised the children, the Brisker Rav maybe, or somebody from that world advised the children to publish it. They said the world must have it, and they didn't appreciate it. By Polish, they appreciated Big Pilpulim and Harifasen, and his Torah is very, very lumdish, very straight to the point, very, you know, on target, and that's it. His Sfarim and Chassidus are a classic. In many ways, they exemplify everything. It's written shorthand, very laconic, and that's why it's not easy in the beginning to learn it. It's small statements with a dot, small statement with a dot, and you have to figure out yourself the connection. but it hits home straight to the heart of the Inyan. It's not vertlach, and you see it. It's not vertlach, you see it, it goes straight to the heart of something, and it comes out with a lot of, there's a very powerful message in it. Moshe Shapiro once told, somebody said over at the Hespid, that Moshe asked this person, what form does he use when he's prepared? This person told him, Svasemes, and another Sefer. So Moshe asked him, what's the Tzustel? So this person was thinking back, said, you know, like, I mean, how did the Rav measure who's bigger, who's, you know, like, this is a bigger person, that's a big person. Moshe said, no. He said, Svasemes is a Muchetika Sefer. When you learn through a shtickle, you say to yourself, yeah, of course, that hits home. That's exactly pshat. It's not like an idea, a nice idea, and you say you're impressed with the idea. It has a feeling of hitting the nail on the head, point after point after point. And it's an incredible sefer. It's probably, in many ways, the backbone of Hasidus in many ways. It's not maybe not Chabad, but certainly in the Polish world and further, Svasemes is that sefer. The Svasemes did not mix much into public inyanim overtly. He worked hard. At the end of the 1800s, the Russian government, Poland, they decided to strive. They pushed that everybody has to go to school, a public school, which was a terrible gzera, was basically gzera shmad. He was very, very involved in stopping it. The way you stop gzeras in those days was, today what you do is you raise money and elect officials, and the officials vote like you want. In those days, it was simply just raise money and gave it to the official. So that was, so he sold off some of his chashvas farm. He had a shas of a very antiquated shas. He sold it to make sure, you know, to be vatlik zera, and it worked for a number of years till I think it's the early 1900s. And the Maize did lead a lot to churban in Poland. He was involved in that. He was involved in Zionism was beginning to pick up steam, and it became a very, very controversial back and forth with the opposition and the people for it, against it. He kept a very low profile, did not talk about it publicly, did not really write about it. Once he wrote, and basically the line he tread was, we can't join them because the intent is secular, but if a person is able to go to Israel, find a livelihood and establish a Yiddish home, and of course it's ideal. So some of the Hasidim actually did go. His son went a few times to Israel and succeeded in establishing Ger over there. But Al Kaponim, he didn't take a public stance on any issue really. Somebody tried to bait him. And he sent him a forged letter from Herzl asking him to please join the movement or to explain to him why not, and something like that, a whole long letter. It's the letter, he never answered it, never charged with it. It was proven to be a crude forgery. But, you know, people still spoke about the letter Dr. Herzl wrote to him. Tachlis, nothing doing. He didn't respond to it, and the letter is a fake. He, for 35 years, he led the Ada. It became possibly maybe the second largest group. I think Alexander might have been bigger before the war. But certainly the strongest movement in Hasidus that had a clear agenda, what their Oifen of Avodas Hashem is, how to go about it, the movement he was the one who put into place. His last years were extremely difficult years. The Russian-Japanese war broke out, and they just drafted hundreds and thousands of his chassidim. The army the Russian army was a horrendous place. The Russian army was a place where, A, even to the Russians, they were extraordinarily cruel. Russians are noted for their unusual dagger of cruelty. That's their Mida Tova. And Bimela, being in the Russian army, I read an account from a Russian guy who said that during World War I, more officers were killed with bullets in the back from the soldiers than from their enemies. Like soldiers more than happy to kill off their officers as revenge for what's been going on until then. So, two, there was no possibility of kosher food. Three, Jews had it much worse. They were sent off to Manchuria. There were problems with agunas. Nobody would know, they would disappear. It was very primitive, and nobody bothered to find, and nobody bothered to identify. It was incredible. And they would come to him all day and all night for brachas, for eitzes. There are a lot of stories about how everything he told somebody would be exactly the way it is. Some people would tell somebody's got to go to the army, and the guy knew that it's not going to help him to try to bribe. Some people he would say, for 25 ruble you get out. For some people would say this. But al kapanim, it took a horrendous toll on his health. He, all the years that the war was going on, he didn't sleep. He slept on the floor. And his clothing would be soaked with tears. He lived it, every single one. I once heard a story, I couldn't find it, that somebody, I don't remember if this person wanted to read his letters or see him, asked him to pay up to people, spoke to him. I don't remember. Somebody wanted to be in on it, and he told him, you will never be able to survive listening to these stories. I'm telling you, you need inhuman stamina to listen to all these stories. Al Kapanim, I don't know if this was the cause, but at the age of 58, in 1905, he became sick. It was a weird illness. It was unidentifiable in those days. It was his body sort of closed down. It became paralyzed all inside a worm, and he until he was nifta. The Sakhachava said about him that the reason why he was nifta from an illness that no one knew what it was, he said, it says, Kol mispal bat chaveiro hu nene tchila. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu could only send him an illness that nobody else had, so he was never mispal bat chaveiro. Because any tzara that somebody could conceivably have, he already had been a mispal bat chaveiro. That's how Rabbi Nezer put it. Al Kapanim, and it was very rapid, he basically became sick. Till his last minute, he pushed himself extremely hard. Even though he had lost command of a lot of his faculties and so on, he still pushed very hard. Heishvat, he was nifta. They made the Levaya sunset, they made the Levaya instantly. After Levaya, his two sons were walking back, and Rabbi Avraham Martel, who took over the abyss from him, the Imamis, who became the Rebbe, told his brother, our father had Arichas Yomim. So his brother looked at him, he said, our father was nifted at 58. What do you mean Arichas Yomim? So he told him, I didn't say Arichas Shanim, I said Arichas Yomim. Every day of his was extremely long and was used to the utmost. So he had 58 years, but each year, the what he put into a day was limitless. So he passed away at 58. He left over the Sfarim on Shas. We only have Kachim and Moyed. There were more Kisviyadis around. They got destroyed and so on. The Sfas Emes that we have, he wrote himself. But it says in some places, I don't remember the end. This is not this. And the reason was, he allocated to himself the amount of time each week that he would write up what he said on Shabbos. And he stuck to it. And if anything And if the time ran out, he waited till next year to write down next year's plus the year before. And if it was visited there, it was 2 years. So some of them had piled up after a while. And he didn't remember exactly how he finished off, or whatever it is, that's what it means. The earlier Torah, before he was a Rebbe, he didn't want to put out. But a lot of people had written them down. They were circulating, floating around all over. And the children put it out under the name Likutei Sfasemes. Likutei Sfasemes are the Torah between the age of 19 and 23, when he was not Rebbe yet. It's incredible to think, at 23, this person became the leader of the Chassidish world. He was uncontested. Nobody had tainus to him. Nobody had issues with him. He kept a very low profile, very nivistic. And he left two sfarim that are, they remain extraordinarily important in each tchum. The metzias of how much a person was able to pack in a lifetime, when it was so, it was because it was so well regulated. He was on top of every minute of his time. He also had extraordinary abilities. I mean, by the age of 18, to be able to have the amount of information, everything, is incredible. He suffered a lot of tsars in his life. His first wife was Nifta, and he remarried a second time. Children were Nifta. He lived in poverty because he didn't take money, and sometimes tkufas were very, very difficult. But tachlis, he remains the towering figure, the towering figure of Tkufa and Chassidus, and Doris later. Hey Shvat, by Gerich Chassidim is a big day, they all eat a Suda, and so on and so forth. Al Kapanim, that's the Sfasemis, and Yotzeit is Hey Shvat, Abba Leib Tovim.